There's a story that's been quietly developing at the intersection of geopolitics and regional aviation, and it's the kind of story that doesn't make the front page but absolutely should be on every pilot's radar. I'm Tower on ATIS, here on Radio Hangar. And today, we're going to talk about a deal involving 85 Russian turboprops, two Indian aviation companies, and what it signals about where the regional aircraft market is headed. Let's start with the basics, because this aircraft deserves a proper introduction. The Ilyushin Il-1114-330. If you're not familiar with it, you're not alone. It's not a household name in Western aviation circles. But in Russia, and increasingly in parts of Asia, it's become a centerpiece of a very deliberate industrial strategy. The Il-114 has Soviet roots. The original design goes back to the late 1980s, developed to serve remote regional routes across the vast geography of the Soviet Union. Routes that big jets couldn't justify, but where you still needed a real airplane, not a bush plane. Think of the role the Dash 8 or the ATR plays in connecting smaller communities to larger hubs. That was the Il-114's mission from the beginning. The 300 variant is the modernized version. New engines, specifically the Klimov TV-7117-STO1 turboprop, updated avionics, a pressurized cabin seating around 68 passengers. Russia has been developing and certifying this variant over the last several years, and it's been part of a broader push to rebuild domestic civil aviation manufacturing after decades of relying on Boeing and Airbus for commercial needs. Today's segment is brought to you by AviationSoul.com, aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, discipline, and pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com, now back to the story. According to Aerotime, two Indian aviation companies have signed preliminary agreements to acquire 85 of these aircraft from Russia's United Aircraft Corporation. 85 turboprops is not a trivial order. That is a significant number. For context, the entire global turboprop market in a given year typically sees somewhere in the range of 200 to 300 deliveries across all manufacturers. So 85 aircraft, even as a preliminary deal, is a headline. The word preliminary is doing some work in that sentence, and we'll come back to it. But first, let's talk about why India. India's aviation market has been one of the most dramatic growth stories in commercial aviation over the last decade. The country is on a trajectory to become the third largest aviation market in the world. Domestic passenger numbers have been climbing at a pace that has airlines scrambling for aircraft. IndiGo alone has orders in the hundreds for narrow-body jets. Air India has been through a complete transformation since the Tata Group took it over. The demand is real, and it's not slowing down. But here's the thing about India's aviation growth. Most of it has been concentrated in the major metro-to-metro routes, Mumbai to Delhi, Bangalore to Hyderabad, the big cities, the big jets, the big numbers. What's lagged behind is regional connectivity. The smaller cities, the Tier 2 and Tier 3 markets, the routes where a 68-seat turboprop makes a lot more economic sense than a single-aisle jet with 180 seats. India's government has been pushing a program called UDAN, which stands for Uday Desh Ke Aam Nagrik, a Hindi phrase meaning something close to let the common citizen fly. The goal is to connect underserved airports, subsidize regional routes, and bring air travel to parts of the country that have been left out of the aviation boom. It's a serious policy initiative with real funding behind it, and it creates real demand for regional aircraft. So the logic of an Indian operator looking at turboprops is sound. The market exists. The policy support exists. The question is, which turboprop? And that is where this gets interesting. The dominant players in the Western turboprop market for this size class are ATR, which is the consortium between Airbus and Leonardo, and de Havilland Canada with the Dash 8. Both are proven aircraft with large global fleets, extensive parts networks, and established maintenance ecosystems. If you're an Indian regional carrier, the safe conventional choice is one of those two. That's what most operators in similar markets have done. So why are two Indian companies signing preliminary agreements for a Russian turboprop? There are a few ways to read this. The first is price. Russian aircraft have historically been priced aggressively in markets where Russia is trying to gain a foothold. If the Il-1114-300 comes in at a significantly lower acquisition cost than an ATR or a Dash 8, that matters, especially for smaller operators trying to make the economics of a thin regional route work. Aviation is a business where margins are thin and every dollar of capital cost gets amortized across every seat on every flight. The second factor is India's relationship with Russia. This is not the place for a political analysis, but the aviation business doesn't exist in a vacuum. India has maintained substantial defense and trade ties with Russia. India operates Russian military aircraft. Indian companies have experience dealing with Russian manufacturers and Russian-made equipment. For some Indian operators, a Russian supplier is not an unusual or uncomfortable choice the way it might be for a European or American carrier right now. The third factor, and this one matters a lot, is the current state of the Western supply chain. If you've been paying attention to commercial aviation news over the last few years, you know that Boeing and Airbus are both dealing with significant delivery delays. Orders placed years ago are sitting in backlogs. The narrow-body market in particular has been constrained by engine supply issues, by production ramp-up challenges, by quality control scrutiny. The turboprop segment is less extreme, but lead times on new ATR deliveries are not trivial either. If a Russian manufacturer can offer competitive pricing and shorter delivery timelines, that's a real factor for an operator trying to stand up a regional network. Now, back to that word, preliminary. Preliminary agreements in aviation are not the same as firm orders. In the commercial aviation world, a memorandum of understanding or a letter of intent is often signed at an air show or at a meeting like this as an expression of interest, sometimes to signal a relationship, sometimes to test political or market waters, sometimes as a negotiating tool with other suppliers. Aviation history is full of deals that were announced with great fanfare and never materialized into actual delivery. That caveat is especially relevant here because the IL-114-300 has its own history of program delays. Russia announced the revival of the program years ago. Certification has taken longer than originally projected. Production infrastructure had to be rebuilt or expanded. This is not an aircraft with a 2,000-unit global fleet and a 50-year service record. It is a relatively new-to-market aircraft from a manufacturer that has been, to put it diplomatically, navigating a complicated set of external circumstances. For these Indian operators to actually take delivery of 85 IL-114-300s, several things have to happen. The aircraft has to continue through certification. Production has to scale. Parts supply chains have to be established or extended into India. Maintenance training programs have to be developed. And the operators have to remain willing and able to proceed as geopolitical and financial conditions evolve. None of that is insurmountable. But none of it is trivial either. Here's what I think this story is really telling us. The global aviation supply chain, which for decades has been dominated by a relatively small number of Western manufacturers and a framework of international relationships that made that dominance stable, is under stress, not collapsing. Not in crisis, but under stress. And when dominant suppliers face constraints, whether those constraints are sanctions, production delays, or price pressure, alternative suppliers find opportunities they wouldn't otherwise have. Russia has been largely cut off from the Western aviation ecosystem since the invasion of Ukraine. Sanctions have restricted access to Western components, Western maintenance expertise, Western financing. Russian airlines have been operating fleets of Boeing and Airbus jets that can no longer be legally supported through normal channels. Russia's aviation industry has been under enormous pressure to develop domestic alternatives, and the IL-114-300 is one piece of that effort. Finding export customers is critical to making that program viable at scale. More orders mean more production, which means lower unit costs, which makes the aircraft more competitive, which attracts more orders. It's the same logic that underlies every commercial aviation program. You need volume to make the economics work. India is a logical target market for that effort, a huge country with real demand for regional connectivity, a government willing to subsidize regional aviation, and a foreign policy posture that does not preclude doing business with Russian manufacturers. For the Western turboprop manufacturers, this is a signal worth watching. Not a fire alarm, but a signal. If 85 aircraft worth of demand that might otherwise have gone to ATR or de Havilland Canada ends up going to Ilyushin, that affects market dynamics. And if the IL-114-300 establishes itself in the Indian market and performs well, it could create a reference base that makes future sales to other markets easier. There's a broader theme here that I think matters to anyone who flies or who cares about where aviation is going. We are in a period of real fragmentation in the global aviation order. The assumptions that govern international aviation for the last 30 or 40 years, shared standards, interoperable supply chains, multilateral regulatory cooperation, are not gone, but they are no longer as automatic as they once were. Countries and manufacturers that were on the periphery of the old order are finding ways to insert themselves more centrally. Countries that were deeply integrated into Western aviation systems are finding that integration complicated. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, and the European Union Aviation Safety Agency, known as ESA, are the dominant certification authorities globally. An aircraft certified by the FAA or ESA can fly almost anywhere in the world with relatively predictable regulatory treatment. An aircraft certified solely by Russia's aviation authority, known as the Federal Air Transport Agency or FATA, faces a more complicated path into many international markets. That certification question is not minor. For Indian operators looking at the IL-114-300, the regulatory pathway for operating and maintaining this aircraft in India, and any potential future export or codeshare implications is a real consideration. I don't have the answer to where these 85 aircraft ultimately land, whether in service or on paper. Preliminary deals in aviation have a way of evolving. But the question of whether they land tells us something real about the direction of the industry. What you should take away from this story is not just the headline number of 85 aircraft. It's the underlying dynamic that made this deal possible to sign. There is enough friction in the Western supply chain, enough alignment of interest between India and Russia, and enough ambition in Russia's domestic aviation program that this deal is at least plausible. And that is a different world than the one aviation operated in 10 years ago. Keep an eye on this one. AeroTime has the full story at their site. You can find more at RadioHangar.com. I'm Tower. Stay ahead of the weather.